Hello, everyone. This is Brian Tracy, and thank you very much for being on this call. What we're going to talk about today is one of the most important subjects of all. And as I began doing work and research on this in conjunction with professionals in this industry some years ago, I was astonished to find that as much as 85% of your success in life, personal, and business will be determined by the quality of your relationships, which means by the amount that people like you and enjoy your personality. It's absolutely amazing how many people get way, way ahead in life just because people like them and open doors for them. And sometimes people say, well, you know, I am who I am and that's all who I am. Well, that's not really true because everyone has enormous abilities to change and improve in a particular direction if they're motivated enough. Some people say, well, I've never been a really charming person, but I'm a nice person. Well, I can promise you if somebody put a gun in your face and was going to rob you and you were afraid of losing your life, you'd be amazed at how charming you would become. What a nice person you would become. And it's interesting when they ask the customers of top salespeople and the most successful companies, they say, what is the quality about this person or persons that stands out more than anything else? And the most popular word used to describe the top people in virtually every area of business and social activities is the word nice. He or she is a nice person. So today we're going to talk about charm and how you can become a more charming person in everything you do. We're going to show you how you can develop that 85% of your life that is determined by the quality of your relationships. What we have found is that your ability to be more likable, to be more friendly, and more charming can do more to move you ahead than the development of any other qualities. Now, when you become more charming, you improve your life in several ways. Number one, you'll become a better spouse, and you'll build happier and more satisfactory relationships with your husband or wife or boyfriend or girlfriend. Number two, when you become more charming, you'll be more popular among your coworkers, friends, and associates in every area of your life. In fact, if you remember back to your school days, remember that some kids were really popular and got invited to all the parties and got chosen first for all the teams. And almost invariably, it was because they were more likable than others. They had kind of a nice personality that caused people to be attracted to them like a moth to the flame. Now, the third benefit, if you're in business, is as you become more charming, you'll become more influential. You'll become more persuasive. You'll become more effective in selling, negotiating, and communicating. They did a study on emotional intelligence, and they interviewed Daniel Goleman in Fortune magazine, and they asked him, of all the work he's done for all the years on emotional intelligence, what's the most important quality of emotional intelligence that determines a person's success or happiness? And his answer was persuasiveness. When you come right down to it, is your ability to be persuasive. I say your ability to get your own sweet way with other people is really the true measure of how developed you are emotionally and as a personality. And in life, you always have a choice. You have a choice. You can be persuaded by others and do what they want you to do, or you can persuade them to do what you want them to do. And being charming is one of the most powerful ways of persuading other people. Interesting, I've worked in the automobile industry. I set up 65 car dealerships at one time and imported $25 million worth of vehicles from Japan. So I had a chance to work with an awful lot of car people. And what I found was that in good car companies, they'll have salespeople, and the salespeople will be different qualities. More and more, you'll find that salespeople today in car dealerships are nicer and nicer people. But then once you've made the decision, they turn you over to the closer. They turn you over to the person who's going to write up the final order. And you think that this person is going to be really aggressive and really determined to get the final dollar out of you. But you find that the closers in the very best dealerships are the nicest people in the dealerships. They're so warm and friendly. They are so charming that you end up buying tinting and rust sealant and chrome rims and all kinds of things you didn't even know you'd wanted, which add hundreds or thousands of dollars to the car, just because of the charming nature of the person. So the very best and highest paid salespeople tend to be charming people. Now, the good news is that charm is a skill that you can learn, like riding a bicycle, with practice. When I first started doing research on charm, and I don't really consider myself to be an outstandingly charming person, The more research I did, the more I was forced to think about the behaviors of charming people. And as I thought about those behaviors, I started to practice them. And as I started to practice them, I saw myself becoming more charming. And as I became more charming, warmer, friendlier, more responsive to other people, they responded to me in a more positive way as well, which reinforced my behaviors of being charming. And there's some very good recent research with regard to neural patterns. And basically what it says is that you can actually change your neural patterns by the information that you take in and that you think about and that you practice. So here's what we have found, is that you become something by dwelling on that quality. When you think about being charming, and then you watch movies and you look at people in interviews and you see how they are charming or not, the more you think about charm, the more of a charming person you become. And it's the most interesting darn thing. And then it reinforces itself. So the starting point of developing charm is for you to decide to be a truly charming person. Now, it's interesting. We call this the power of decision. But it's amazing how many people lead average lives until they cross a point where they make a decision to do something different. And then they back that decision with resolve, and they keep up their resolve until they achieve the decision. It's like achieving a goal or financial independence or losing weight or anything else. You can become anything that you want to become if you simply decide to do it and then back that decision with total resolve until you're successful. So start by giving yourself a grade on what is called your charm quotient of 1 to 10. How charming are you today? You give yourself a grade, say on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the most, 1 being the least. Then ask yourself, how charming would other people think you are? If you were to ask your spouse, your girlfriend, your coworkers, your best boyfriend or girlfriend, if you were to ask them how charming you were, what kind of a grade would other people give you? Interesting, your self-image is largely determined by how you think others think about you. If other people think that you're a charming person, you know what? You become more charming, just sort of automatically by osmosis. Now, the deepest need that each person has is the need to feel valuable and to enjoy high levels of self-esteem. Sometimes I'll ask an audience, I say, who is the most important person here in this room? And after some discussion, I'll say, you are the most important person. Each person here is the most important person in their world. And how important you feel you are largely determines the entire quality of your life. Almost all unhappy, dysfunctional people are people who don't feel important. They feel unimportant. They feel disrespected. They feel inferior in comparison with others. But really successful people feel that they are important and valuable, which means that they have high self-esteem. And the best definition of self-esteem is how much you like yourself. How much do you like yourself? And we encourage people to say over and over again, I like myself. I like myself. I like myself. You see, there's a rule that says you can't give away what you don't have. And the more you like yourself, the more you like other people. And the more you like other people, the more they like you right back. In fact, two of the greatest fears that we have are the fear of failure. What if it doesn't work? And the fear of rejection. What if people don't like me? And as you say, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself, before you go into any situation, your confidence and your courage go up and your fears go down. So before you go into any social situation, especially making a presentation, making a call, going to a party, where you're going to meet and interact with other people, get yourself cranked up, almost like your own personal cheerleader, and say, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself. And one wonderful thing is that the more you like yourself, the happier you are. And the happier you are, the more relaxed you are in your interactions with other people, and the better you do everything else in your life. What we have found is that the flip side of self-esteem is self-efficacy, which is your feeling that you can do your job well, your feeling that you can achieve your goals. It's a feeling of competence and effectiveness. The more you like yourself, the more competent and effective you feel you are. And the more competent you are, the better results you get, the more you like yourself. And they become like an upward spiral. So the key to charm is real simple. It's to raise people's self-esteem when they talk to you. Now, here's an important point. Most people are preoccupied with their own self-esteem and with how other people are reacting to them. You know, there's a joke I used to tell when I was in Finland, and the joke is there's an American, a German, and a Finn meet an elephant on the road. And Finns are notoriously introverted. They've got a reputation for that. So the American says, "Wow, look at that elephant. Look at all those great big steaks you could get from an elephant like that." And the German, the businessman, said, "Look at all that ivory. Look at all the expensive things you could make from that ivory." And the Finn says, "Ooh, I wonder what the elephant's thinking about me." And whenever I tell that story, they all laugh. But it's amazing, when you go into a social situation, most people, because of insecurity and lower levels of self-esteem, their first thought is, "Ooh, what's the other person thinking about me?" However, when you raise your own self-esteem and you really like yourself and you feel good about yourself, what you do is you get out of yourself and you get into the other person. You forget about yourself when you go into a social situation. Forget about anything and focus totally on the other person, as though the other person is the only other person in the world, and just forget about yourself altogether. So the key to charm is to raise people's self-esteem, and when you do, the way that you do that is you stop worrying about your own. And the most amazing thing is this, is people think about themselves 99% of the time. So when you start to be really focused on the other person, they start to be really open to you, and you forget about yourself completely. Now, the way is simple. Make other people feel important. Make other people feel important. If you were just to simply emblazon that or tattoo it on your hand, that will open more doors for you and assure you more happiness and success than you could imagine. And this is a perfectly selfish thing, because when you make other people feel important, just because of the way you are structured as a human being, you feel more important as well. When you help other people to like themselves, they like themselves. You see, you can't make another person feel better about themselves without you feeling better about yourself as well. So you can actually control the quality of your own feelings about yourself by simply looking for ways to help other people feel better about themselves. Now, there are 7 things that you can do to make people feel more important in your conversations with them. In other words, there are 7 things that you can do to be a more charming person. Now, number 1 is, don't do or say anything that attacks or lowers the self-esteem of others. Especially, decide today that you will not criticize, complain, or condemn. It's interesting. We all fall into rhythms, and many people fall into rhythms of complaining and condemning and criticizing. As they meet someone and say, "Hi, how's it going?" "Oh, yeah, fine, but I couldn't find a parking space, and television didn't work last night, and my back hurts, and I'm really behind on this assignment," and so on. Whine, whine, whine. You know, whenever I say something like that, my wife says, "Would you like some cheese with your wine?" So catch yourself and refuse to use criticism of any kind, especially in a social conversation. Even if the other person is criticizing, sort of like they're hitting the ball over, don't hit it back. Just respond to criticism that other people give about you or others with silence. Just don't respond to it. Don't say a word. If someone says, "Aren't you going to say anything?" you say, "No, I have nothing to say about that." Don't play criticism. It puts a black cloud over the conversation. When you meet a new person, the very first thing you can do is say, "Boy, isn't this a lousy day?" Or "It's too bad about our team that lost last week." Or "What about those people in Washington?" and so on. You immediately set up a black negative dynamic. So remember that wonderful line from Frank Sinatra. He said, "If you can't say something nice, don't speak at all," is my advice. And do the same way yourself. The second is condemning. Anyone for anything creates a negative force field of energy. And a negative force field, you know, you've heard of the law of attraction. The law of attraction says that when you're positive and happy, you attract people and situations into your life. When you're negative or condemning someone or something for anything, high prices, low interest rates, terrible bonuses for AIG officials and so on, whenever you condemn anyone, you create a negative force field of repulsion, and you drive people and circumstances and good fortune out of your life. So don't do it. And finally, complaining. When you complain, it makes your conversation negative and unpleasant. What I find is that many people grow up in a family where one of the parents, unfortunately, usually the mother, complains a lot. And so what they do is they grow up believing that complaining is what you do when you grow up. And so complaining becomes their way of life. I know people that I've known for 20 and even 30 years. And if ever you meet them or talk to them, the first thing they do is complain about some part of their life. That is their normal method of interaction, is to pick some part of their life and complain about it. Now, if you want to be charming, imagine a person with a piece of spinach on their front tooth. If you want to be charming and you complain, it's like having that piece of spinach on your front tooth. It just completely turns off the other person. So it makes your conversation negative and unpleasant. So the antidote is resolve to be cheerful no matter what is going on in your private life. Keep it to yourself. Now, many people have a false idea. I just read a quote from Socrates yesterday. It said, "The beginning of wisdom is the agreement on the terms that you're going to use." In other words, what are the words and what do the words mean? Many people think that complaining is being sincere, or complaining is being honest, or complaining is being open, or complaining is being genuine. No, complaining is just being negative and unpleasant. And so the only reason a person can engage in a behavior is by justifying it and rationalizing it to themselves before they do it. But the fact is that complaining is never useful. So no matter what's going on in your private life, and especially if you're in sales, especially if you're in business, especially if you're going out socially, never talk about your problems. You know, there's a joke that 80% of the people you talk about don't care about your problems, and the other 20% are kind of glad you've got them in the first place. So don't talk about your problems. Even if your whole life is going to heck in a handbasket, be cheerful, be smiling, be pleasant, and don't talk about it. The interesting thing is that if you resolve not to talk about your situation, it quickly drifts away, and you start to get more involved with the other person and what they're saying. So that's number one. Don't criticize, complain, or condemn anyone else for anything. Be a completely positive, cheerful person, no matter what's going on in your life. And wonderfully enough, if you do something repeatedly over and over again, you eventually develop a habit. And pretty soon you develop the habit of being a genuinely positive person, the kind of person that people like and want to be around and want to talk to. Number two way to make people feel important is be agreeable. The most positive and most successful people are very agreeable. So refuse to argue or suggest that the other person is wrong. When you argue with anybody, your words are seen as a direct attack on their values, opinions, or even the personal character of another person. And whenever you argue, it makes another person defensive. And when they become defensive, they become angry, like a porcupine bristles. And they look at you in a negative way. They feel that they have to defend themselves against you, almost as if you had a weapon. And the weapon, of course, are your words. So when a person says something with which you don't agree, socially or in business, just keep your ideas to yourself. Just nod, smile, and say, that's very interesting, yes, that's a very interesting point of view. Just be completely neutral. You'll find, by the way, that really good negotiators and really good diplomats and all charming people maintain their neutrality. They just smile and they say, And even if the other person is wrong, let it pass. When I was coming up, I remember in my 20s, I used to read a lot more than other people. And so whenever I met with somebody, we'd get into a conversation, especially about politics or economics, and as soon as the subject came up, I would just jump in and I would slash around with a verbal sword to demonstrate how smart I was and how much I knew. And no matter what the other person said, I could always one-up them. And I was always right, because I had done my reading. And then I noticed that when I came around, people would quickly move away. People started to avoid me. Nobody invited me to parties anymore. People just kind of averted their eyes when I came by. And I found that I was winning the arguments but losing the war. And I simply stopped. And when I stopped, I created a vacuum, and people began to flow back to me, and my life improved. And I learned a valuable lesson. If somebody says, so-and-so, the federal elections are on November 6th of every year, and you know it's November 4th, just let it go. It's just not that important. If it's life-shaking, of course, you can say something, but if it's not, just let it go. That is a mark of character. It's a mark of self-control. It's a mark of personal strength, and it makes you a more charming person. And the more agreeable you are with other people when they're talking, the more they like you. And the more you nod and smile and agree, and you're interested in what they're saying, the more they think that you are a fabulous personality. Now, the third way to be charming is to practice acceptance. This satisfies a deep subconscious need of other people. the need to be unconditionally accepted by other people in their lives. Going back to early childhood, the child's greatest need is for security. And security means that they're 100% loved and accepted by their parent. You'll find that almost all adult problems go back to feelings of insecurity, frustration, anger, and lack of acceptance in early childhood. How do you express lack of acceptance of another person? You ignore them or you criticize them. In either case, what you're saying is you're no good or you're not good enough. Now, the reverse is for you to practice complete acceptance when you meet other people. And the very best way to demonstrate unconditional acceptance is simply to smile. When you smile at another person, it makes them feel more valuable and important, and it raises their self-esteem, and it makes them like you more and see you as more charming. Now, here's what physiologists have found. It takes 13 muscles to smile and 110 muscles to frown, so it's much easier to smile. Psychologists have found that when you smile, the very act of smiling releases endorphins in your brain. And those endorphins cause you to feel happy. It's called nature's happy drug. When you smile at another person and they catch your smile, their brain releases endorphins as well, and they feel happier in your presence. And it all comes about from a very simple smile. So the practice of smiling on a regular basis. I remember Gary Smalley used to give this example. He said, imagine that you were walking down the street and you saw coming towards you a friend of yours from high school that you hadn't seen for 10 or 15 years. But in high school, oh my, you were the best of friends, and you went out and you went in and you went on dates and you had this great life and history and everything else. And there's that person. Geez, your dear old friend from the past. You'd say, there you are. Geez, it's you. It's you. Wow, how are you? How are you doing? You'd be so happy to see the person. Now, imagine taking that and applying it to the most important person in your life, your husband, your wife, your child, your coworker. Imagine doing the same thing. And when I learned this many years ago, that's what I began to practice. When I come home and I see a member of my family, I say, geez, it's you. Because the member of my family is 100 times more valuable than a childhood friend I haven't seen for 15 years. And how many of us come home and just treat our family with indifference? Dennis Waitley says we often treat our kids like family pets. We come home and give them a little pet and go back and go and watch television. But imagine that you go up home and you say, it's you. And when you come into the office and you see your coworkers, if you're the boss, be happy to see your coworkers. Say, hi, it's you. How are you? How is everything today? How are you doing? Did you have a good weekend? How's the work going? It's such a powerful and simple thing to do, but it causes people to light up like lights on a dimmer switch and cause them to feel happy about themselves and causes them to feel that you are a really charming person. Now, the fourth thing you can do is to express gratitude on every occasion. Be thankful and say thank you for ideas and insights and help of any kind. The words thank you are magical words. When you say thank you to other people, they feel happy themselves. Their brain releases endorphins, and they feel motivated to do more of the things that you thank them for. That's why all good bosses, all good parents, all good companies are constantly giving awards to other people for having done things that help the company or the family. When my children were growing up and I wanted them to clean their room, sometimes you really have to work on them to clean their room. But then when they would do it, I would make such a big thing if I say, wow, thank you so much. That looks so good. I'm so proud. I'd run and get Barbara. Barbara, come and take a look at this room. You won't believe it. And I would do this, and my kids would sit there beaming. And it has a wonderful effect on them when they grow up because they associate doing something positive with being appreciated. So you can never say the words thank you too much and too often. The more you express gratitude toward others, the better and the more valuable they feel about themselves and about you. Now, here's an example. Let's say you meet a person and you want to make a good impression on that person. I'll talk about this in a second. When they say something, have you read this book? Have you seen this article and so on? You say, no, I haven't, but thank you for the recommendation. I work with people that are so charming. And what they'll do is say, can I write that down? And they'll immediately pull out a pen and a notepad, and they'll write down the name of the newspaper or the name of the book or the name of the article. They'll write it down as though what you just told them is really important, and they want to follow up on it. And you know what you feel? You feel, wow, you feel important yourself. You feel happy. You say, boy, this is a really nice person. I like this person because they like me, because they appreciate something that I did or said. Or you give people an insight. I was talking to a business associate yesterday, and he said he's going to deal with a particular situation this way. I said, well, why don't you deal with it another way? Because I think that would be more effective. And he said, thank you very much. You're right. That would be a much better way to do it. Well, how does that make me feel when people thank me? How does it make you feel? So thank people for everything. Thank them for big things. Thank them for little things. When I was traveling, and I've traveled now in 95 countries, when I was traveling, I found that the two phrases you learn are please and thank you. And if you use please and thank you all the time, always say please and always say thank you for what people do, it's like walking along lighting candles. People just light up every time you say please and thank you. They'll get you halfway across any country in the world. Just learn those languages when you cross the border. Now, the fifth way to raise the self-esteem of others and make people feel important is to express admiration. Admire people for their traits, for their possessions, or for their accomplishments. You see, people invest an enormous amount of emotion in developing their personal qualities. So if you say, boy, you are sure punctual, or you are really persistent, or you are really confident. When you compliment people on a quality they have, their self-esteem goes up. They like themselves more. They consider you to be a more valuable and perceptive person by the very act of admiring their qualities. I wish I was as persistent as you, or I wish I was as focused as you are. Whew! People think, wow, what a wonderful person you are, to have noticed that in me. Also, with regard to personal possessions, people spend a lot of time and thought on their personal possessions. Their pen, their shoes, their dress, their suit, their purse, even their haircut, their tie, their brooch. Whatever they happen, people give a lot of thought to whether or not I'll wear this or I'll use this or something else. So always express admiration. And finally, their accomplishments is when you admire at them and you express positive feelings about what they've accomplished, their self-esteem goes up, and they like you more as a result. And this takes no effort on your part. As a matter of fact, all you're doing is nodding and smiling and giving positive feedback. Now, the sixth way to raise self-esteem and become a more charming person is to give approval and praise whenever you possibly can. One of the best definitions of self-esteem is the degree to which a person feels himself to be praiseworthy. So whenever you praise a person, their self-esteem goes up. They feel more valuable and important. And if you're a boss or a parent, when you praise people for a behavior and you give them approval, you motivate them to repeat that behavior again so that they can get more praise, so they can feel even happier about themselves. Praise is perhaps the most powerful interpersonal technique you can use to positively influence the behavior and emotions of other people. I've worked with the American Society for Training and Development, and I've studied all of the various methods that are recommended for motivating people, and number one is praise. Praise is the number one factor that causes people to do even better. Now, the seventh key to raising the self-esteem level is to being a more charming person is to pay attention. Listen closely to other people when they talk. This has actually been called white magic, because when you listen really closely to people, it has a magical effect on them. I was at a business meeting in Los Angeles last year, and I had just given a talk, about a 15-minute talk, and I give a talk with a lot of energy. And so I was tired when I finished speaking, and I went to the back of the room, and I was kind of, you know, rebuilding my energy, and a woman came up to me, very successful, multimillionaire businesswoman came up to me, and I'd met her before, and she began talking to me about one of her ideas. And I was really tired, and I didn't really have anything to feed back to her. So what I did is I just focused on her really intently. I just watched her mouth and eyes, as we'll talk about in a second, really, really intently, and made no comment because I was too tired. I didn't have any comments to make. And after about 5 minutes of talking, and the more I listened, the more intensely she spoke, and the faster she spoke, she stopped, and she said, God, you're a good listener. Now I understand why you're successful. And I felt just kind of a little bit guilty because it wasn't because I was a great listener. It was because I was tired and I didn't have anything to say. But that made a real impression on me. God, you're a great listener. When you listen with laser beam intentness to another person, they say, geez, you're a good listener. and their self. That when you listen to a person intently, their brain releases endorphins. Their self-esteem goes up. They feel more valuable and important. They like themselves more. They feel happier in your presence. They want to talk more. They want to be with you. It's just the most amazing thing that you can do by listening. Now, it's been said that all of life is the study of attention. Your life goes where your attention goes. What do you pay attention to? You'll know that if you have a particular subject that you like and you read an article on it in the paper, your eyes dart to that article. When you see something around you on television, your eyes move quickly to whatever it happens to be. Life is the study of attention. If you change the focus of your attention, it's almost like changing the guidance mechanism in your life. You change the direction of your life. So what we know is you always pay close attention to that which you most value. It's very important to understand. You pay attention to what you most value, and you ignore what you don't value at all. Now, in paying attention, you make the other person feel valuable as well. Now, here's an important point. If someone talks to you and you don't pay attention to them, you devalue them. And this is a mistake that men make. You see, men get sort of preoccupied with their work or with what has happened in the day, and they're thinking about it. And when one of their family members talks to them, they can be preoccupied and really not paying attention. And they don't mean to. It's not their intention. But what they're saying to the other person is they don't value you that much. Here's another thing. If you're reading the paper and someone in your family wants to talk to you and you continue reading the paper, what you're saying is, I value what's in the paper more than I value you. Same thing with television. I value what's on television more than I value you. Now, that wasn't the message that you meant to send, but that is the message that is received. As opposed to when my wife or my children come and want to talk to me, I turn off the television. I put down the newspaper. I stop doing everything that I'm doing. I learned this as a young married man. I stop doing everything that I'm doing, and I focus totally on the person. And it's amazing the difference it makes. What I'm saying is that whatever else is on or around, you are more valuable than that. So the key to paying close attention to others is to develop the skills of listening. And these are the skills that make you one of the most charming people in your world. There are four keys to effective listening. Number one is to listen attentively without interrupting. This is so important. Listen attentively. Home in on the other person like a beacon and listen without interrupting. Someone once said that most people don't listen, they wait. And it's a very interesting thought. They wait for an opportunity to get their shot in. They're just waiting for the other person to stop talking so they can start talking. What you do is you be consciously aware of this natural tendency, and instead of waiting to get your shot in, concentrate intently on what the other person is saying. When you listen attentively to another person, as I said before, it acts like a form of white magic, and it raises that person's self-esteem and makes them feel happy in your presence. Dale Carnegie tells a story about two people who meet at a social gathering, and one man asks the other person questions, and the other person asks the questions, and follows up with more questions, and more questions, and more questions, that hangs on every single answer. And then the people move around, and they move away, and someone says, I see you were talking to so-and-so. And the person who had been speaking said, that person is the most charming conversationalist I have ever spoken to. She was absolutely amazing. She was so charming, and she spoke so well. Well, it turned out someone who had been standing watching said the other person had only said a few words in half an hour and was considered to be a great conversationalist. So it's really important. Listen attentively. Now, number two is pause before replying. Most people, when the other person stops, they jump in. And as a result, they tell the other person, I don't really care what you said. I want to talk and say, tell you what I think, rather than to listen. So when you pause, when you allow silence in a conversation, while you carefully consider the words that the other person has said, you tell the other person that what he or she has said is valuable and important to you. And by extension, you are valuable and important as well. Here's the rule. Is you must allow silence in the conversation. It's the silence in the conversation that causes the person to feel valuable and important. Now, the third key to effective listening, first, listen attentively, don't interrupt. Second of all, pause, allow a silence in the conversation while you think about what the person said. And 3, question for clarification. Never assume that you know what the person meant. Instead, ask a question like, how do you mean? How do you mean exactly? That's very interesting. How does that work? Or how would you do that? Whenever you ask a question, whenever you question for clarification, the other person will expand on what they just said. And when they're talking and you're listening and hanging on every word, what will happen is they'll think, geez, you are a neat person. Wow, you have a good personality. There's a factor called the halo effect in psychology. And the halo effect says that if I believe that you have one good quality, it actually creates a halo around you, which causes me to feel that you have lots of other good qualities as well. As an example, if you listen really attentively to another person, and the other person thinks that you are a really charming person, they also think you're more intelligent. They think you're more confident at your work. They think that you're more insightful. They think that you're better educated. They think that you have qualities and skills and talents and abilities maybe far beyond what you truly have, because they'll take one quality, the fact that you listen to them really closely and make them feel good, and they'll generalize that into the fact that you are a truly superior person. It is amazing how many people have been hired for important jobs, given important assignments, had people fall in love with them, had people choose them over other people for no other reason than they were good conversationalists. They were considered to be charming. So always ask, how do you mean? Now, when you meet a new person socially or in business, there are 4 questions that you can ask that will cause you to come across as interested, enjoyable, and charming. Remember this point. The person who asks questions has control. The person who asks questions has control. The person who is talking is controlled by the person who is listening. If ever you find that you are talking too much, and talking too much socially means that you have said more than 3 sentences in a row. If you said more than 3 sentences in a row, catch yourself and immediately ask a question. And when you ask a question, you reach out and you grab the conversation and you take control. Human beings are conditioned from infancy to answer when they're asked a question. So when you ask a person any kind of a question, how long have you lived in this city? Are you married? Do you have children? What kind of a car do you drive? What part of the city do you live in? Where did you go to school? When you ask a person any question at all, they are conditioned automatically to answer the question. I was speaking to a man at a social political gathering recently who's worth $40 billion. And for about 10 minutes, I just did nothing but ask him questions. And he did nothing but answer the questions. And he had other things to do, but he could not go away. He could not tear himself away because I was asking him questions about him, his business, his company, his products, his history, his background, and everything else. And people's favorite subject is themselves and their previous lives. Whenever you ask people about themselves and their lives, how they got to this point, they consider you to be charming and they have an irresistible impulse to answer. So here are 4 questions you can ask when you meet a new person in business, especially at a social function. This is not for selling. The first question is, what sort of work do you do? Now, this is a very general question, and a person can answer it at depth or can answer it shallowly. But human beings are fascinated by their work because the work that they do is almost like the summary result of everything that they've done in their life up to now. So what sort of work do you do? People love to talk about their work. And then what you do is you listen as though this is absolutely fascinating. I capture snakes and sell them to zoos. Wow. I met a person once who did that. By the way, he went to Africa and he got poisonous snakes. And I know the poisonous snakes, like the green mamba and the adder. And these are snakes that if you got one bite of one of those snakes, you'd be dead in 30 seconds. And that's what he did. Captured snakes, took them back in a big bag through customs and sold them to zoos. And anyways, what sort of work do you do? B is, how did you get into that field anyway? Again, people love to talk about how they got to where they are today. They love to talk about their past history. Now, when the person stops talking or starts to slow down, they're checking to see if you're really interested. Are you just, acting as though you've just taken a personality course, or are you really interested? So when they slow down, you ask this question, which starts them up again, and the question is, and then what did you do? And then what did you do? And they'll immediately start talking and expanding on their previous comments. And then the last question you could say, and then what did you say? And then what did you do? And then what did you say? Now, gentlemen, when you come home at night, the most important thing you can do is to rebond and reconnect with your spouse, which we'll talk about in a couple of seconds. But the very best thing of all is saying, what did you do today? And then what did you do? And she will always report what she did in terms of what people said. And you say, and then what did you say? And then what did he say? And then what did she say? And when you ask these questions, your spouse will love to answer these questions and will genuinely think and feel that you really care about him or her and his or her day. Now, how do you charm a woman? Well, women are, my estimation, the most wonderful creatures in the world. And women and men are very different in many ways. Women really enjoy men who are charming. It just appeals to their emotional and their relationship-oriented nature. They want to be with charming men. They want to socialize with them. If they go to a party, if they go to a meeting, they immediately want to go and talk to the charming person. So what you do in charming a woman is you practice what is called the law of indirect effort. Now, the law of indirect effort says that instead of attempting to impress her, be impressed by her. The law of indirect effort says that instead of trying to have a friend, be a friend. Instead of trying to make yourself feel more important by talking about what you've done, try to make the other person feel more important by asking them questions about what they've done. This law of indirect effort is one of the most powerful ways of building happy relationships and charming other people. But especially with regard to a woman, be impressed by her. Ask her questions about what she does, what she's done in the past, where she learned her skills, where she got her education, and be impressed by that. Treat her as if she is the most fascinating person in the world at that time. When women are asked how they define a charming man, they'll say that when he is talking to you, you feel like you're the only person in the world, even if you're surrounded by other people. Now, this laser-like focus takes a little bit of practice for a man to develop, because we're not born with it naturally. But you can develop it by resolving to do so, and then by practicing it. And I promise you, the women in your life will allow you to practice on them all you want. Concentrate on her face and words like a laser beam with great intensity. Imagine that your eyes are sun lamps and you want to give her face a tan. And you want to give her face an all-over tan. So concentrate with great intensity. And the more intensely you look at her face and lips and concentrate on her when she's talking, the more brighter are your sun lamps and the better tan that you give her. When you think about that, it's really helpful. Now, women have three primary needs in their interactions with other people, especially with men. And this is based on years of research. And that is that women need to be treated with affection, attention, and respect. The very best thing that you can do in your interactions with a woman is to pay very close attention to her when she talks. The very worst thing you can do is to not pay attention. Women are very offended when they're in an interaction with a man and he doesn't pay attention. And so it's really important that you pay attention because that's paying value. Women feel that if you're not paying attention to them, you're not valuing them sufficiently. And they get real unhappy about that. So when a woman wants to talk to you, it's very important you pay attention. Practice your listening skills, especially listening intently. Pause before replying. Don't just jump in and override her or overrule her. Just pause and allow silence in the conversation. And then question for clarification. Never assume that you know what she meant by what she said. Say, well, how do you mean exactly? Or let me make sure I understand what you're saying. Is what you're saying this? Feed it back in your own words to prove that you are really listening. Every man has had an interaction with a woman where she says, you're not listening to me. And you say, yes, I was. She said, all right, what did I just say? And, of course, in most cases, you get it wrong. So it's really important. The way that you prove to a woman that you are really paying attention is you say, well, you just said this about that, and you said this and this and this. And almost invariably, and this happens all over the world, the woman will say, very good. That was very good. They are really impressed when you do that because it's so unusual. Practice acceptance with the woman in your life. Be glad to see her and to hear her voice. Is when you see her, brighten up. There you are. When you hear her voice on the phone, hey, it's you. Wow. that causes a woman or even a man to feel absolutely wonderful about themselves. Practice appreciation for everything that she does. Keep saying thank you. Thank you for this and thank you for that and thank you for doing this and thank you for doing that. You cannot say thank you too often. Every single time you say thank you, it's like a mental, emotional massage. It makes her feel happy and valuable and important, and it makes you a more charming and lovable person. Practice praise and approve her accomplishments and her actions. Whatever she's done, whatever she's accomplished, make a big thing of it. I have two sons, two daughters. And my daughters especially, I've wanted them to grow up with really high levels of self-confidence and self-esteem. So from the time they've been infants, I really make a thing about anything they do. They draw a little picture, I'll put it up on my board, I'll put it on my mirror, I'll make a big thing of it, I'll show it to people. If they get a good grade, whatever they do, I always make a big thing of it. Over and over again, I tell them, I praise and approve what they've accomplished. And they've grown up feeling just really great about themselves. And surprisingly, they are very popular, and they're considered to be charming amongst their friends as well, because they do the same thing. They have no insecurities. They're not wondering, what's he thinking about me? What's she thinking about me? They're more concerned with the other person. And finally, admire her appearance. Admire especially her clothes and her grooming. Women put a lot more thought into their appearance than men do. Women will change shoes, change earrings, change dresses, change hairstyles. They'll change accessories. Men just can put on things and not even think about it. So always admire. When she looks good, say, boy, you look terrific. Oh, that's great. That's a beautiful dress. Wow, did you change your hair? Women love for men to notice that they have made a special effort to appear the way they appear. And women really think about this. And when you admire it and acknowledge it, women will consider you to be charming. They'll consider you to be far more likable, far more friendly, far more intelligent, far more perceptive. Now, how do you charm a man? All right, well, men are pretty simple, but men and women are different. A woman's primary source of self-esteem, according to psychologists, and value and satisfaction is contained in her relationships. These are more important than anything else to her. Her family and her relationships really are the sun around which her life turns in orbit. So men's primary source of value, going back 25,000 years, is his ability as a hunter, his ability to achieve, to produce, and to provide. We are wired this way. Women are wired to be very attentive to relationships, to tones of voices, to body language, to other people. They're more sensitive than men are. But men are wired to produce, to achieve, to hunt, to bring home the game. So the way to charm a man is simple. Ask him questions about his work and his achievements, and be impressed by what he has accomplished. So every man has accomplished something, and some people have accomplished a lot. When a man goes off to work, when he comes back, as Laura Schlesinger says, he's pretty simple. He doesn't need a lot. He just needs to be appreciated for the fact that he went out and worked all day. And even if you worked all day as well, you can get your satisfaction. You, the woman, can get your satisfaction from your relationships. He has to be acknowledged for it. Men, by the way, are insecure in this sense. Is they have what is called insecurity of status, is they never feel that they're safe. They never feel that they're okay, because going back 25,000 years, if you hunted and you brought down a deer and you brought it back, the deer only has a short life before it goes bad, and you have to go out and hunt again. So the man can never stop hunting. He has to keep going out and hunting, so he's never secure. He can never relax. That's why financial security is one of the most important things we strive for in our lives. We want to reach a point where we have enough money so we don't have to keep hunting. Women, however, can get their sense of value from being happy in their relationships with their spouse, their children, their friends, their family, and so on. So a woman can actually have a sense of completion with good relationships, whereas a man can never have a sense of completion. He constantly needs to be reinforced. He constantly needs to be appreciated for his achievements. So, men are simple. At the end of the day, they just need to be appreciated for their work. And the way that you do that is you say, you know, how was the work today? How did it go? Boy, I guess that's hard work. It sounds like you really got a lot done. That's all. Men don't need to be beaten over the head with it. Just a little appreciation. Like hunters, thousands of years ago, when a man comes home or comes back to the cave, he needs to unwind and to relax from the hunt. thousands of years ago, 25,000 years ago, he would come back and sit with the other hunters around the fire and practice what is called fire gazing. They would just sit around the fire and look at the fire and talk a little bit about the hunt and prod the fire with a stick to keep the logs moving. 25,000 years have passed and very little has changed. Today, men come home and they engage in fire gazing. Only today, it's the television. And the prod is the remote control. So what men like to do when they come home is they just sit down and decompress. They don't leave a lot. They just need to decompress. Now, men can only process one sensory input at a time. In other words, if he's watching television, he can't hear when you talk to him. He can't see and hear at the same time. If he has to look at a map when you're driving, he has to turn down the radio because he can't read the map and listen to the radio. Women are multisensory. Women can have seven different processing centers in their brain for communications. Men have only two. So when a man's watching television, if you want to get his attention, you have to stand directly in front of him so you break his line of vision. Or you have to ask him to turn it down or turn it off or put down what he's reading and pay attention to him. So it's very important that you understand. It's not that men are being difficult. It's just men are wired differently, and they can only process one sensory input at a time. And if, as a woman, you have to make sure that you are the sensory input. By the way, if ever you go out for dinner or for a meal, always sit opposite each other. Never sit sideways. Always sit opposite each other so he is looking directly at you. That way he can concentrate single-mindedly on you, and you can concentrate single-mindedly on him. Now, there's a wonderful author named Gary Chapman who wrote a book called The Languages of Love. And he said that different people express and receive love in different ways. And this is a very important part about being charming. If your style of receiving love is different from your partner, you can have problems in communicating. And many marriages have gone to the brink of divorce until they realized that each person was communicating in a different love language and the other person was not receiving. My friend Tony Alessandra teaches the Platinum Rule, which he says is to treat people the way they want and need to be treated rather than the way you want to be treated. And it's a very, very good rule, which is to find out what other people want and need. So here are the five love languages that you can use in becoming a charming person, not only in your personal and family and intimate relationships, but also in your relationships around you. Number one, very popular, is words of affirmation. Verbal expressions, compliments, admiration, and appreciation make a person feel important, respected, and loved. For example, when someone says, "I accomplished this" or "I accomplished that," you say, "That's amazing. That's wonderful. You must be very proud of that." Those are words of affirmation and accomplishment. Those cause a person to feel valuable. That satisfies one of the deepest subconscious needs of others, which is to be acknowledged. Remember, words are important. Don't just assume it. Say it. Sometimes people say, "Well, she knows I love her because I come home every night." No, women need to hear it. Men need to hear it as well. Your staff needs to hear appreciation on a regular basis. Now, the second love language is quality time, which means doing things together on a regular basis. What we say is that the first hour after the end of the day is the hour of power. This is where you take some time at the end of the day to reconnect. When you come home at night, don't turn on the television, don't check the email, don't read the paper or go through the mail. When you come home at night, focus like a great spotlight on your spouse and concentrate solely on him or her for the first hour. Concentrate on your children for the first hour. Forget all those little irrelevant things. Concentrate on the most important people. Quality time, face-to-face, head-to-head, knee-to-knee, is a powerful way of saying that you love a person. And the opposite of that is not giving quality time, which causes a person to feel that you don't love them very much at all, or that you love whatever else you're paying attention to more than them. Now, you should plan movies and dinner and going for walks with your husband or wife on a regular basis. Write them in as a schedule. With my wife and I will talk to her at the beginning of the day, and we will set a time to go for a walk, a time to go for dinner, even a time to watch a program on television. Don't let it just happen randomly, because very easily the time can be squeezed out. And here's one recommendation. It's called date night. And I learned this some years ago. You should take your spouse out on a date to a nice place at least once a week. And you pre-schedule it just like when you were dating. You make a reservation. You get all dressed up. And you have date night. And on date night, when you drive to the restaurant, you leave the radio off and you just talk. And when you get there, you focus single-mindedly on the other person. Date night is one of the most wonderful relationship building and relationship management tools in the world. Leave things off. When you're with your family, be there 100% of the time when you're with the other person. Leave the radio off. Leave the television off. Turn off the computer. Turn off your cell phone. Turn off everything and just be there the whole time. Now, the third language of love is receiving gifts. Some people believe that love is expressed via gift giving. And again, this can go back to childhood. One of the parents, usually the father, would bring a gift when he came home from a trip. And so, or little gifts during the year, birthday gifts, gifts for various special occasions and holidays and so on. Some people feel that if you love me, you give me gifts. Other people, like me, grow up in a different tradition where gift giving was quite uncommon except at Christmas. And so you could be going along and your spouse can feel irritated, unloved, unappreciated, because you don't bring little gifts. And sometimes you can ask about that. Just see that. Does your spouse give little gifts to you? Does your spouse give little gifts to other people? Hey, ding, 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 ding. They're trying to tell you, this is what gets me going. This is what makes me feel loved. So you can give gifts of small objects, like a pen or flowers. Something small. You can pick up a scarf when you're traveling, a little box of chocolate. It's not the gift. It's the thought that goes behind the gift. It's the very fact that you thought about the gift. You can give gifts of time by making sure that you're present at important moments and events in the life of the other person. This is very important, taking the time to be there. I have flown from the other side of the country. I have flown from Europe and Asia to be at a special event for my spouse, for my wife, or one of my kids. And I'm just there with hundreds or thousands of other people, but they know it, and they know I made an effort to be there. And you can give cards and notes expressing love and appreciation. Just picking up a card and sticking it under somebody's pillow before you leave, or leaving it when you go to work so that they'll find it when you're gone. Little things like that saying, I sure appreciate you. See you tonight. Something like that. Wow. People feel loved. Now, the fourth way that you can express love is what is called acts of service. And that's doing things physically for the other person, even if the other person is quite capable of doing them by herself or himself. Picking things up, carrying things, opening the door, closing the door, handing somebody a coat, taking the coat off, taking the trash out, making a bed. Just little things like that, picking up laundry, carrying people's stuff from one side of the house to the other. It tells the person that you love them. And many people feel that if you don't do little acts of service, then you don't really love me. And they will never say it aloud. They will just kind of feel unloved and sometimes resentful. And the fifth expression of love is physical touch. And physical touch means touching them on the shoulder, giving them a little hug, kissing them on the forehead. You know that song that said, touch my hair when you pass my chair. Little things mean a lot. So touch a person's hair when you pass their chair. Just doing little things, holding the chair for them, holding their hand, putting your hand on their back, just little tiny touches like this that are non-sexual touches, they're just affectionate touches, can have an enormous impact on people. Now, there are seven tactics and techniques of charm that you can use to be a more charming person, and these are skills like learning how to type or ride a bicycle. Number one is eye contact. Eye contact is very powerful. Look directly at the speaker when they're speaking. Hang on every word. Lean forward into the speaker as if what the person is saying is absolutely fascinating. It is amazing how mesmerizing eye contact is when you really pay attention to a person and how much they like you and how much smarter and more charming they feel you are. Second is called the flick, is when you are giving eye contact, instead of boring into their eyes, flick from eye to eye and back to the mouth. Eye to eye, like a windshield wiper, and back to the mouth, almost like a triangle. Eye to eye to mouth to eye. Eye to eye. Just actually flicker your eyes around their face. And this gives a look of complete attentiveness, makes the person feel relaxed because they're not being stared at, and makes them feel that you're a charming person. Head tilts is another technique or tactic. These express inquisitiveness, curiosity, and fascination. When a person says something, just tilt your head to the side or tilt your head to the other side. And like you're saying, wow. That's really interesting. That is amazing. I hadn't thought about that. A head tilt is a powerful way of being charming. And if you combine that with eye contact and eye flicks and head tilts, you just mesmerize the other person. Now, number four is head nods. Nodding your head is a sign of active listening. It shows that you're not passive. You are fully engaged in the conversation. Now, if you nod your head slowly, it means I'm following what you're saying. It doesn't mean that I agree. It just means that I'm following you. I'm with you. Keep going. It's okay. If you nod your head a little bit faster, you're saying, I agree with what you're saying. Yes, you're right. That's true. That's a good point. Yes, absolutely. I'm with you. And the faster head nods, we say, I'm excited about what you're saying. That sounds really interesting. Wow, I'd like to learn more. The fifth technique is whole body language. Whole body language means lean forward and face the person directly. Swing around if you're sitting down and face the person and lean into the person. When you're standing with a person, shift your weight silently onto the balls of your feet. And what this does is it projects your whole energy forward toward the other person and causes them to feel mesmerized, causes them to feel that all your energy is boring into and listening to what they're saying. Now, the sixth is what are called vocal reassurances. A vocal reassurance is like, uh-huh, yes, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you give vocal reassurances, you tell the person, I'm listening, I'm with you, I'm fascinated, keep going, don't stop. If ever you want to stop a person from talking, by the way, the most amazing thing is this. You're talking to a person and you're listening and you're nodding and smiling and everything else. And if you ever want to stop them from talking, just swing your head away and just look off into the room and make no sound. They'll stop talking as though they had just hit a wall because it means that you're just completely detached from them. But when you swing to them and lean forward and smile and nod and agree and flick from eye to eye and mouth to eye, they are fascinated and will talk more and more and more. And finally, number seven, tactic of charm is act as if. The act as if principle says, pretend and imagine that you are a thoroughly charming person and that the other person is absolutely fascinating. Just imagine you are thoroughly charming and the other person is absolutely fascinating. Just imagine when you walk into a room, you say, darn, I am charming. I am such a charming person. I have a magical effect on everybody I speak to. And like a laser beam, go and find a person and say, hi, how are you? What's your name? What sort of work do you do? And just hang on every word. And you get this reinforcement by pretending that you're a charming person and pretending that other people are charming. It comes true. Okay, here's the last couple of things, being charming in business. And we say there's basically seven keys, and then we'll open the lines for questions. Number one, always be positive, happy, and cheerful when you meet customers or other business associates. Always be pleasant. The most effective, most successful, highest paid people are always charming and cheerful. They're positive to be around. Even if there's lots of problems in your life or even in the relationship, always be charming. Number two is always ask good questions. Prepare thoroughly in advance. Think through the questions you're going to ask and ask good questions. Number three, listen intently to the other person when they speak. In selling, this form of white magic will do more to help you make sales than any other single behavior, and asking good questions and listening really closely to the answers. Number four is take notes whenever possible. Whenever you take notes when another person is speaking, they think that you're really paying attention. They feel more valuable and important. They feel that their words are more important, and they will say more and more things. Number five, feedback what the other person has said in your own words to demonstrate that you were truly listening closely. Number six, make recommendations and suggestions in a tentative way. You know, based on what you said, what I would recommend for you would probably be something like this. That's called closing the sale. But a recommendation is far more acceptable than something more forceful. And finally, in sales and in business, at the end of your conversation, always ask for action. At the end of a sales call, ask for the business. At the end of a conversation, always say, what is our next action? Or at sales conversation, what would you like to do now? What should be our next step? Always insist that you end the conversation by making a decision to do or not do something as soon as possible. Now, many people have transformed their personalities and changed their results by deciding and then learning how to be charming. And you remember the story of the fellow walking down the street in New York, and he comes across a musician, and he says to the musician, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? And the musician says, practice, man, practice. Well, the way you become a thoroughly charming person is you listen to this over and over again, and I'll send you out all these notes so that you can review them quite quickly. And then you just practice, man, practice, until you become one of the most charming people of your generation. Thank you for listening. Now, let's open it up and take questions from people on the call.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star zero on your touchtone telephone. Once again, press star zero if you have a question. One moment while I grab some questions.
Thank you.
Okay, we are ready for our first question.
Wonderful. Go ahead.
Okay, first question is from Garcia. Garcia, please state your question.
Yes, my question is, after this teleseminar, what would be the next step to read one book that you might have?
Well, we're going to send you these notes, which you can read quite quickly. You can review the notes from which this seminar comes. You can read quite quickly and get a review. We're also going to send you a copy of my book called The Power of Charm, which has basically 35 things that you can do to be more charming. And we're also going to send you some other materials like power networking. How do you become really popular when you network with other people? The science of self-confidence. How do you build your self-confidence to the point where you're not afraid of anything, especially in your interactions with others? So it will all come to you, Mr. Garcia, as soon as we finish.
Thank you very much. Thanks for putting this together. This is Call from China.
Well, thank you very much from calling from China. Thank you.
Okay, our next question here is from Jim. Jim, please state your question.
Can you just repeat the three needs of women?
The three needs that women have are for attention, affection, and respect.
Thank you.
And if a woman feels that she is not being listened to, as you know, they become very cross, very angry about that, because that means instead of valuing them, you're devaluing them. If you don't express affection to a woman by looking at them, talking to them approvingly, and expressing in words, they react very poorly to that. And, of course, respect speaks for itself. The more respect that you show and express to a woman, the more valuable and important she feels.
Thank you again.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jim.
Okay, our next question here is from Nancy. Nancy, please state your question.
Thank you. The significant other in my life tends to be very negative about his work or the politics. You mentioned the AIG bonuses, the bailout. What is the kind way to, he knows I'm a positive person, what is the kind way to turn that conversation around for him?
Well, one of the things that people do, and you and I are overwhelmed with so many negative things in our advice, is to look for the good. So I wonder what there could be that is good about this. And look into it for something good. And almost like a game, say, you know, there's something good in everything. I wonder what it could be. And then look for it. And maybe the good thing is that you're going to think differently about your finances, about savings, earnings, and so on in the future. For example, I believe that Americans have been spending more than they earn for too many years. And it's all come home with a crash. And the only way to be financially successful is to spend less than you earn. And the rule is to live on 80 or 90% of your income and save and invest 10 to 20% throughout your life. This has been a rule that goes back to 3,000 years. It's been the number one way to financial independence, and we've lost sight of that. So maybe with these serious reverses, we've learned that lesson again. And by learning that lesson, it will assure that we achieve financial independence in our working lifetime. A second thing you can do, Nancy, is look for the valuable lesson. What lessons can we learn from this? Don't worry about the macrocosmic, what's happening at the Washington or New York level. Say, what lessons can we learn in our own personal lives that will help us in the future? And whenever you look for the good or look for a valuable lesson, you immediately become positive. And you'll always find something good, and you'll always find at least one lesson. And then you take control of your emotions.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nancy.
Okay. Our next questioner is from Robert. Robert, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for your presentation today. I'm sitting in my car listening to you. What happens if, you know, the person we're talking to has unattractive qualities that that just kind of jump out at you? And it could be in business. I'm a counselor. I deal with people who often have idiosyncrasies and have difficulties. And,
yes.
You know, how do you focus on that at that time?
Well, you know, this is always going to happen. And because you're a counselor, you're probably far more discerning than the average person. You just have spent much more time thinking about it and observing it. Discernment means some things are going to jump out at you. And the way that you can neutralize your negative feelings with another person is to redirect the focus of attention. And the way you do that is you ask the other person, tell me, what are your two best qualities? If someone was to do an analysis of you, what are your two very best qualities? And ask them that and get them and say, why did you settle on those qualities? And then what you do is you focus on what they think they're the best at. And I've done this in the past, by the way, and been quite astonished at some of the stuff that came out. I mean, just I went from being negative or critical or judgmental toward a person to being very, very impressed. Another thing is, what are the two most things that you've accomplished in life that you're most proud of? What are your two biggest achievements when you think back? What are your two biggest achievements? And listen and say, why would you pick those two? And so now what you have done is you've redirected the conversation. You're bringing out the very best in the person. You are changing your perspective because instead of being aware of the negative things, you're actually aware of the positive things. And by the way, you will come across as a far more effective and charming person when you're asking people about the very best parts of themselves and encouraging them to elaborate. And then what did you do? And then what did you say? And how did you start doing that? And how did you get out into that area anyway? It's absolutely amazing. And you'll find that people who start off being negative, in your opinion, can start to become very interesting. Just give it a shot.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And I want to let you know I found out about this through Twitter. I got your Twitter notes.
Well, thank you, Robert. We'll send you a whole bunch of stuff, Robert.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question here is from Joyce. Joyce, please state your question.
Good morning. What can I do to gain effective communication, build rapport, and gain information in a work situation which is male-dominated?
Yes.
I want to learn too, but they don't take me seriously. I get this sort of, don't worry, dear, some guy will take care of you. And I, how can I get the information without being perceived as being aggressive? One-to-one, they will, you know, talk, but not in the group situation.
Yes, well, you know, men are very tribal, and they behave differently when they're surrounded by other members of the tribe than when they're with you personally. The way that you do this, by the way, especially if you want to learn and you want to move ahead, the way that you do it is very simple, is you ask for a specific piece of advice. You know, you say, I want to be more effective in this area. What one book or audio program would you recommend that would be helpful to me? And you ask one person for one piece of advice, and then you take action on that one piece of advice. You go and get the book, and you read it. And then you go back and say, you know, I read that book, and I really like those 2 points about doing this, and I'm going to use it. Do you have any other recommendations? And by doing that, people, you make him feel important, appreciated, intelligent, insightful, thoughtful. And he will help you. And you can do this with as many males in your environment, one-on-one. Just ask them for advice because, you know, there's an old saying that never give advice because the propensity to give advice is universal, but the propensity to ignore it is universal as well. If, however, you actually ask for advice specifically and then do something on it, pretty soon people will start to see you in a very different light. And will start to open doors for you, give you opportunities, advance you, talk about you in a positive way amongst other people. But do it one person at a time. one piece of advice at a time.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, our next question here is from Slay. Slay, please state your question.
Thanks, Brian. As I understand, charm is closely associated with self-esteem.
Yes.
What about sexual energy? How do they connect it, sexual energy and charm?
When you say textual energy, what does that mean, Slay?
My name is Slav. Sexual energy, sexual.
Sexual energy.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, the interesting thing is that being charming requires very little effort. The other thing is that if you're talking about being charming with a member of the opposite sex, the more charming you are, the more attractive you are. It's interesting. They've done all kinds of studies, and I've done this for years. One of the greatest sources of sex appeal is confidence. The more confident a person is, the more attractive they are to other people. And when you are so confident that you can ask questions and listen, and you have no need or desire to boost yourself or tell the other person about yourself or talk about yourself, when you have that calm confidence and you just like the other person, you're fascinated with the other person, you come across as very attractive. It makes you more appealing. So that's why sometimes I joke about Mick Jagger. Now, here's a guy who looks like he's been beaten with a stick. He's not attractive at all, but he comes across with such incredible confidence that women swoon at his feet just because of his self-confidence. So the more charming you are, the more confident you come across, the more sexually attractive you appear.
Brian, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question here is from Randy. Randy, please state your question.
Hello. Randy?
Yes, I'm here.
What is your question?
Yeah, just a quick question. You've done a lot of material on sales and whatnot. Have you ever considered doing anything specifically for the network marketer?
Absolutely. Almost everything that we're talking about here works in network marketing. Network marketing is very much building relationships one person at a time and then maintaining those relationships. So virtually everything we're talking about here is important. You'll find, by the way, the most successful people in network marketing are the ones with the best personalities. That network marketing is very much based on loyalty to the person who brought you in and the person above that. And the more you like that person, the more loyal you are to them. The more charming they are, the more friendly they are, the more you're willing to work really hard, not only for them, but for yourself.
Great. I met you at the ILG conference, and thank you for signing my book.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Questions?
Okay. Sorry. Our next question here comes from Larvista. Larvista, please state your question.
Hello, Brian. I really enjoyed your presentation today.
Thank you.
It's about... You mentioned when we're listening to someone to really pay attention and to look for the positive, and when they are negative, to actually not respond to that.
Yes.
At all, and either turn the conversation to something positive, or in some cases, you just simply say, don't get involved in their negativity. So when you stay outside, just by silence, for example, when they're criticizing or they're going on and on. Now, the question then becomes, I have a few friends that happen to be women, but they go on and on. And sometimes they call me at home, and I work at home. And the interesting thing is that they will go on for like 20 minutes, and I'll be just silent on the phone. And they'll ask me, are you still there? And I will say, yes, I am. They don't ask me if I'm interested in the topic. They just go on.
Yes.
So how do I then, I mean, there's some wonderful things about them too. How do I don't want to be preachy to them and tell them that, you know, you are this way, you are that way, and I really don't like when you do this. But how do I call attention or help them somehow that they have become more aware of the fact that they go on forever and that they should be more aware of the other persons on the other side, if they have time, if they're interested in the topic?
Yes, well, I've taught this for 25 years, but here's the bottom line, and I hate to have to tell you, but they don't really care very much about you. They care about themselves. And they use you as someone to talk at, not to talk to, not to discuss. In fact, I often taught people that if you want to end a conversation like that, you say, you know, I've got an enormous number of problems in my life as well, and I want to share them all with you. You're such a good, such a good listener. Let me tell you about some of my problems. And they say, oh, I'm sorry, I've got to go now. Late. And they're gone. They're gone in a flash. They have no interest in you. And when they finish talking to you, what they do is they pick up the phone and they call the next person. And they go from person to person. And what they do is they use their problems in life as a way to get you to listen to them talk. And it doesn't matter who you are. They would talk to a recording. And you think that they're talking to you because they think that you're a good person and that you're sensitive and that you're open and that you're aware and so on. No, they don't think any of that at all. They only think about themselves. So one of the things you can do, especially if they call you at home, is just say, look, I've got a business call coming in 3 minutes, and cut it off. I say, whoops, and they say, whoops, I've got a call coming in. I've got to go. And cut it off quickly. Just don't let it run on. Say, Jesus, nice to hear your voice. I've got a business call coming in 3 to 5 minutes. How can I help you? What's going on? You know, and cut it off quickly. And you know what they'll do? Is they'll hang up and they'll call someone else and they'll forget all about you. Now, I can prove this to you. Do you want me to prove it to you?
Yeah.
Is the proof is very simple. Is the same person will call you 2 or 3 days apart and tell you the same thing they told you 2 or 3 days ago. And you'll say to yourself, doesn't this person remember that they told me all this 2 or 3 days ago? And the answer is no. She doesn't remember because she's been spending the last 2 or 3 days sharing her problems with everybody she's met, and she's forgotten about you completely. How am I doing?
Amazing.
When you're in a situation, you feel that this is unique. This could not be happening to someone else until you find that it's pretty much standard. It's happening to everybody.
But if they say, okay, so what are your problems? Because some people, like, they're almost like gossip gatherers. They like to know about problems. And I really don't have problems. I don't want to share problems with people. Then what do? If they ask me, really? You have problems? What are they?
Yeah, they won't. They will hang up so fast. But the simplest thing is say, look, this is my business line. This is my office. I have a call with a client coming in about 5 minutes. I'm really busy. And just cut it off. And there's another thing that you can do. Is in the middle of the call, while you're talking, you can be saying, well, I'm going to the beach this week. Just hang up. Hang up in the middle of a sentence. And they won't call you back.
Good one. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Okay, our next question here comes from Krishna. Krishna, please state your question.
Thank you, Brian, for very charmingly adding great value to all of us today.
Thank you.
What book or audio program do you recommend to become an effective listener and communicator?
Well, we're going to send you the book, The Power of Charm. We'll send you this CD. We'll send you The Science of Self-Confidence. And we'll also send you Power Networking, which gives ideas and techniques. But the methods that we talked about here are very simple. Number one, listen attentively. That's really hard for men to do because they want to talk. Number two is pause before replying. Develop the habit of not answering immediately and thinking. Number three, questions for clarification, because the person who asks questions has control. And number four is feedback in your own words. And if you just practice those four, that covers 90% of effective listening. Everything else is just add-ons to that. And the most important of all is number one, is just listen attentively.
Thank you.
With no effort to interrupt.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question is from Janet. Janet, please state your question.
Hi, I'm from Connecticut, and I really do appreciate all of this, including all of these wonderful questions for clarification. My question has to do with your business strategies, and they're wonderful. Maintaining a positive, happy, and cheerful outlook in today's economic circumstances when customers come in is not easy. I was wondering if you would address how you would do that.
Well, it's a great question, and we all suffer financial reversals. I have a good friend who's the president of a large company. He's had to lay off 2,000 people and shut 40 offices. Every day he goes into the office, the phone rings, and people come in because of cutbacks in the business, and he has to make a lot of hard decisions. And he told me recently, very, very smart guy, he said, every morning when I get up, he said, I have a choice. I can be happy or I can be very happy. And so I decide that today I'm going to be very happy. And that becomes his choice for the day. There was a man named Henry Drummond who wrote in the 1800s, and he had a little line. He's a spiritual teacher. He said, the first hour is the rudder of the day. So it's just like if you have a good, solid breakfast, you'll be properly nourished for the day. If, on the other hand, you decide, mental nourishment, that I am going to be positive and upbeat today, I'm going to be very happy, and you just make that decision, you'll be surprised at how much more positive you are. And remember, with regard to negativity, it's very easy to slip into negativity. And the way that you avoid that is you just don't get into it. Someone says, so this is terrible and that's terrible and everything else. You always say, all right, what is the solution? What action can we take? What can we do now? What's our next step? And you keep focusing on the action that you can take. And surprise, surprise, when you think in terms of solutions, when you think in terms of actions, you become automatically positive, and you help the other person to become more positive as well. And practice makes perfect.
Okay. We'll go on to the next person.
Right.
Our next question here is from Chuck. Chuck, please state your question.
Yes, thank you so much, Brian. I have a question. I call on a lot of accounts, 60 different accounts, and what key phrases, word tracks do you like to utilize in initiating a conversation on the phone or when you first walked into that business owner's office, for example?
All right, well, the answer, being an old sales guy myself, the answer is that everyone has a knee-jerk negative reaction to a sales approach. And so the way that I used to neutralize that is I always start off with the platinum rule. What does the other person want? And in business, in accounts, people want one of two things. They want to save money or save time, or gain money or gain time. So whenever you call a person, you always phrase your offering. I say never talk about what your product is. Talk about what it does in terms of to save or make time or money. And say, you know, we have an idea here that can help you to save this amount, make this amount, reduce the time. Because that's what people are interested in the business, save or gain time or money. And I just need about 10 minutes of your time, and I'll show it to you, and you can decide for yourself. And another thing I used to say, Chuck, is, you know, I'm not calling to sell you anything. I'm not here to sell you anything. What I would like to do is ask you a couple of questions and see if we can't help you save or gain time or money in a cost-effective way, and you can decide for yourself. In other words, remove the threat. Is everybody, even especially in today's market, wants to save or gain time or money. And if you say, look, I'm not going to try to sell you anything, I'll just show you what we have shown to our other customers, and you can tell me if these ideas apply to you, if these same reasons that they use our services apply to you. And if they do, then we'll proceed, and if they don't, then it's okay. Real low-key. I'm not going to take up very much time, no pressure. I'll lay it out in front of you like in a swap meet, and you just take a look at it, see if you like it. That used to work for me, getting cold call appointments, telephoning, knocking on doors. And it seems to work for everybody. Is that helpful?
Yeah, that is very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck.
Okay, our next question here is from Joseph. Joseph, please state your question.
How you doing, Brian? Thank you for taking the time, obviously, to guide us and advise us. With that being said, obviously, being a young business owner, you have done many things, not only in our business, but also in the way we carry our lives. What was inspirational to you? I mean, what motivated you to be who you are now?
Well, after all these years and thousands of books and articles and everything, I think the turning point, I always say there's three turning points for me, and they never change, and they're still the same. Number one is the acceptance of responsibility. We are living in the age of irresponsibility. And the age of irresponsibility is the age of childhood. It's the age of arrested development. You know, in the Bible, Ecclesiastes says, when I was a child, I spake as a child. I acted as a child, but when I became a man, I put aside childish things. When you become a man, you accept responsibility for your life. When you become a woman, you become an adult. You say, I am responsible for my own life. If there's problems in my life, yes, that's normal and natural. You breathe in, you breathe out, you have problems. But I'm responsible for my behavior. I'm responsible for my life. And that gives you and enables you to take full control over what's going on. Because when we talk to other people, the number one reason that people are negative is they're blaming someone else for their problems. All the conversation, 99% of negative conversations is blaming someone for something in your life that you're not happy with. So number one, take responsibility. I learned that when I was 21, and it was like a door being slammed in my face, because up to that time I thought the world was responsible. My parents were responsible. The church was responsible. The second was when I discovered goals. And I really encourage people to become really good at setting goals. Because goal setting, I can tell you, literally tens of thousands of people have told me, as it happened to me, transforms your life. Having clear, written, specific goals that you work on every day gives you a sense of direction, a sense of personal power and control. And then third of all is continuous learning. Continually get better. It's just continually work at getting better at what you do. I studied time management and wrote and did books and courses and trained hundreds of thousands of people. One of the best techniques, one of the best ideas I ever learned was that the greatest of all time management techniques is to get better at what you do. Get better at what pays you the most. And why that is because some people earn $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 a year when with one additional skill they could be earning $100,000 or $150,000. So getting better, moving into the higher income ranks in your field, can save yourself years of hard work and get into the same income level. And most people have missed that completely. So it's really, really important. Just get better. Continue to get better. And one thing I'll mention for our friends on this call is ask yourself, since things are changing so rapidly, just ask yourself, what one skill, if you were absolutely excellent at it, would help you the most to double your income? What one skill would help you the most? And accept responsibility for developing that skill. Write it down as a goal. Make a plan to achieve it. And then work on it every day until you've mastered that skill. And those are the things that have changed my life year after year after year.
Perfect, Brian. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and we have one last question from Andrew. Andrew, please state your question.
Thank you very much. I'm so happy to be, I would like to say, the last person on this seminar.
Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. I have been reading most of your books. Currently, I just read one of your books, Advanced Selling.
Yes.
I am actually, would I say, I'm a qualified mortgage advisor and then training to become a financial advisor.
Yes.
I'm sure you know how the environment is for mortgage advisors at this time. So.
Yes, very difficult, very, very challenging.
Yes, yeah, so what I had to do is... I've taken up a job that is what I market research, where we carry out surveys. And in this case, what I do is I go door to door, knocking on doors, and then trying to get into people's houses, arrange for interviews. And then so far, I've been doing quite well, I would say, in general, because I'm able to meet a target. But what I want to ask about is, you know, in order to reduce my rejection rate at the door, you know, because I know you have had quite experience when it comes to cold calling and, you know, knocking on doors. So,
yes.
You know, that 30 seconds rule, that is like the first 30 seconds that you need to, you know, tell the person at a go, this is what I'm here for, so that the person doesn't, you know, maybe bang the door on you or maybe call the dog or, you know, because once you knock the door, most people will come in front with their dog or others will just open the door slightly just to see who is there. You know, they just want to hear what exactly you want to say within that short period. So what I want to ask is, from your experiences, what will you say you advise me as to note about in order to take advantage of that few minutes that I will have at the doorstep to convince the person to allow me into their room to conduct the survey?
Well, Andrew, I wish I could give you a sales tutorial in the 30 seconds we have left.
Right.
I got my son a job door-to-door selling after he graduated from college. And I said, you have to do this for a year. for the rest of your life, you'll be set for success. And so he went out, and for a year he knocked on doors. And he had the same experience I did, is that most people will say no. And okay. So what they would do is just simply knock on more doors.
Yep.
And eventually reach the point where he would step back from the door. He would say something like, I represent major international company, and I wanted to ask you two questions while we're here in this neighborhood, something to get their attention so that they would pay attention and they would talk. He said if he could get them to talk for 30 seconds, his chances of making a sale went up dramatically. So the key is, what kind of a question could you ask? And sometimes he would say, I see you've got a golden retriever dog. How long have you had that dog? And the person would, again, conditioned to answer a question when you ask the question, and he'd be really interested. And he said, excuse me, my name is, and he'd introduce himself, what are these flowers here by the door? He was just curious to know. In other words, he kept looking for creative ways to get people to pay attention and to answer.
Right.
And he went on to be very successful in door-to-door selling.
Okay, that's brilliant.
But there's no simple answer. Door-to-door selling is one of the hardest things you ever do. Yes. And when you become really good at it, though, you'll be successful all your life.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you, Brian.
And thank you for everybody for being on this call. We appreciate you very much. And if you have any questions that are not covered on this call, then just send them to BrianTracy@BrianTracy.com, and I'll answer them personally. And we'll send you out all the things that we promised you. And so go out there and be charming. Be charming. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.